Welcome to Understory, this 21st of March 2018. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Today on Understory, we are discussing the rule of law in Western Australia, particularly when it applies to the environment and in relation to climate change. Let's go back just over a year ago when Western Australians were getting ready to vote in the state election. The environment movement organised a forum to discuss issues, bringing together candidates and conservationists. The Perth Town Hall was packed with members of the public, and the election only a few days away.
Politicians are going to come and join us on stage. We have two. In fact, I've been emceeing several panels in the last couple of weeks. I only seem to see two parties at all these events. The Liberals don't seem to want to rock up at any event that I'm at, but we do have two politicians, Chris Tallenter, the MLA Shadow Minister for Environment and Climate Change, and Lynn McLaren, MLC, Greens member for South Metro. They are here. We have two politicians. I think they deserve a round of applause.
There was concern about Row 8 and uranium and the role of the Environmental Protection Authority. Martin Pritchard, who's the director of Environs Kimberley, highlighted the social clashes arising from environmental decisions. For example, those that had allowed the James Price Point development.
What we really should remember is that in 2008, when the current Premier, Barnett, came into power in September, one of the first things he did was remove the veto that Aboriginal people had on the site of a gas hub on the Kimberley coast. 3 months later, he decided that it should go to a place called North Head. Then the EPA said, no, there's too many whales there, and there's Aboriginal communities, and he went, okay, let's do it at James Price Point. And I guess it's quite pertinent now that 8 years later, you've got the riot police down the road here arresting people trying to protect the environment. And that's how the current Premier started off. We shouldn't forget that dozens of people were arrested in the Kimberley. People still don't talk to each other. Families broke up because of the wedge that was driven into the community. It's something really serious that we should remember when casting a vote.
Simple sleights of hand, or a unique redefining of what a significant site might be for Aboriginal people, allowed the department to eliminate 3,000 Aboriginal significant heritage sites, which incidentally provided mining companies easy access to their projects. There was defunding of the Environmental Defenders Office and attempts to advance anti-protest legislation that seemed to outlaw peaceful dissent. In these circumstances, there was more needed than environmental action, more like an overhauling of environmental regulation and of the rule of law. Here's a question from a member of the audience that night.
Recently, the state EPA knocked back the Cameco-Yeelirrie uranium mine, citing the risk of extinction of 11 species. The risk of extinction at the site makes the project incompatible with several objectives of the Environmental Protection Act, including the precautionary principle and the principle of the conservation of biological diversity and ecological integrity. Alarmingly, the State Environment Minister Albert Jacobs went against the EPA recommendation and approved the mine based on broader economic and social matters. Currently, the uranium price is around $26 a pound, and most uranium miners accept the price needs to be between $45 and $70 for a new mine to be economically viable. So clearly, the Minister's optimistic figures of jobs and revenue are far from being realised. To the candidates, how is it, under our existing laws, a Minister can dismiss the objectives of our environmental laws on the false premise of economics and jobs? And what does your party think about the recent actions of the Environment Minister to dismiss the objectives of our environmental laws? And how would you change the assessment process or amend laws to prevent such decisions in the future?
Okay.
I guess we kind of touched on this before. Look, I think when it comes to a thing like a Yeelirrie, if the Environment Minister of the day, the government of the day, wants to go ahead and do these things, they're going to do it, and they're going to cop the political judgment of the people in the end. That's the environmental impact assessment process does allow for that. That's where I think we're really seeing a problem, that when the EPA ignores its own policies, policies that are not just cooked up overnight. They're often policies like a wetland protection policy that will have been consulted on for years and then eventually gets gazetted and effectively has the it has the force of law. It is then dismissed by the current minister with the stroke of a pen. And that is just disgraceful. There's no balance there at all.
You know, parliaments are about making laws. Chris is right. The current laws do give the minister powers to, I was going to use a swear word, the environment. And what we need to do is change those laws so that it is not a political decision.
So I think Chris summarised it all well, and it probably highlights the fact why we need law reform in this area. John Bailey mentioned before the Environmental Protection Act, you know, it comes from 1986. It's had a few amendments along the way, but no one's had a real look at, you know, how do we get proper ecologically sustainable development? You know, the environmental aspect is tested somewhat. It needs to be improved. There's a public process. It could be improved that way, but how do you actually test the social and in particular the economic benefits or disbenefits of a project? There's no way to test that. It goes to Cabinet and Cabinet makes a decision. So you get a decision such as Yeelirrie, which may not even be economically feasible. So I think it just highlights the need for law reform. It highlights the need for a tribunal or environmental court as well, where there's a proper public process. Whether the final decision needs to be made by politicians, that's a separate question. But I still think there needs to be greater transparency in this area.
Thank you.
Just want to make a quick comment about this because there's a bigger picture to this. It's about the type of development that we want for our state.
Piers Versteken.
And, you know, there's an assumption here in our environmental laws almost that economic development comes at the cost of our environment. Mm. But we actually need to transition to a different type of economic development that doesn't systematically degrade and undermine our environments. And so in that sense, we need to be looking not just at the environmental issues, but at the economic issues as well. And we get these decisions made by ministers, whether it's for Row 8 with no business case at all, or whether it's for Yeelirrie, overturning the advice of the EPA for a mine that has got no investors and no business case. And it's voodoo economics. And there's no scrutiny of the actual economics of these projects. So I think if we are going to have ministers able to overturn environmental advice and laws on the basis of economic assessment, let's actually get some proper economic assessment that actually looks at, you know, what the costs and benefits to our community actually are.
Thank you, Piers. Question number two.
In WA, we currently have judicial reviews through the courts to assess if the correct procedures were followed, but not necessarily if the right decision was made in an environmental sense. In other states, such as New South Wales, there are specialist merit reviews since 1980 through the Land and Environment Court. Will your party support the creation of an environmental court in WA to follow the lead of the eastern states?
Okay, so let's go with politics first. Chris, first up? Or no, Lynn.
Chris gave me the microphone. That's how we're going to work
first
in Parliament. In January this year, we came out and backed the Lewin Group when they called for establishing an environment court. And you might be interested to hear that this also came up at the Planning Institute of Australia lunch, where I was talking with the planning ministers. I was on a panel with them. And I also expressed our support for this because it came up from the development industry, as you would imagine. The debacle that is the Row 8 approvals has now shown that the WA lacks the mechanism to hold the WA government to account for its decisions. And that's having a negative impact on the environment. As the Lewin Group rightly pointed out, the Supreme Court's findings that the EPA is not required to follow its own policies has shown that at the moment, the courts can't hold the government to account on matters relating to biodiversity. The Greens will ensure that whoever is in government is held to account for protecting our precious places. And I look forward to learning more about how we can establish an environment court. I think the suggestion from the government when they responded to that, which was that it was unnecessary, is an inadequate answer. And for them to say that we can just go to the Supreme Court, obviously it cost us thousands of dollars to do that. And we shouldn't have to do that to protect our environment. We shouldn't have to spend thousands of dollars from non-government organizations and individuals who are just trying to protect what is, as our traditional owner told us, it's our responsibility to be custodians of this land.
So it's been a year for the state Labor government to act on the environment. They immediately scrapped the highly contentious Row 8 plan, but Main Roads has still been quietly proceeding with an element of that scheme around Murdoch Drive. Another story will be exploring that issue in a future program. The government just announced that they were not going ahead with Mangles Bay, welcomed by environmentalists who care for Point Perrin, but there's still a legacy of the flawed environmental approval processes. With all this in mind, understory reporter Adrian Glamorgan thought it was timely to contact the director of the Conservation Council, Piers Versteken, for an update about environmental decision-making, and especially the matter of action on climate change.
What are the priority areas for making Western Australia a place where rule of law and environmental science plays a major role in public policy?
Look, I'm really glad that you've asked that question because even though it might be a slightly dry and to some people quite a boring topic, the legal regime and the laws that we have in place are so important in terms of how our environment is protected or how it isn't protected. What we're living with now is a legacy from the previous Barnett government where they actually reinterpreted a number of our environmental laws in a much worse way that really reduced the level of environmental protection. We saw that with projects like the Row 8 Highway project, where they entirely relied on offsets to mitigate environmental impacts, and that was actually going against the policies of the EPA at the time. Similarly, with the uranium projects that were approved, environmental standards really went out the window with those projects. But we're also seeing that with other projects as well, like the Mangles Bay Marina, which is now thankfully been rejected by the Minister for Planning. I think it was clear that she could see that even though that there was an environmental impact assessment done at the time, it really hadn't addressed the environmental issues, and the government, if it allowed that project to go ahead, would be left with a very expensive and controversial environmental legacy from that project. But where we're at the moment is we're actually trying to uphold the environmental laws that we have in Western Australia through the court system. And the Conservation Council and traditional owners have been in the Supreme Court challenging one of the worst environmental approvals that was made under the Barnett government. It was the approval for the Yeelirri uranium mine. Now, one of the things about that approval is that the EPA advised that that project would definitely cause the extinction of a number of species. We're talking about underground Steiger fauna, creatures that live in the groundwater underneath the ground and are largely unknown to people. Once the gate is open to allow extinction for a project like this, we could see that our cockatoos or our numbats could be next. And that's why it's so important to us that we want to try and overturn that decision and uphold the original interpretation of environmental law. The other problem with that Yeelirri decision was that it went against the advice of the EPA, but also against the advice of an independent appeals process. And both of those independent processes recommended to the minister that the project shouldn't go ahead, and yet the minister went off and made a completely different decision. Now, what that means is, if that interpretation is allowed to stand, it means that there can be a very thoroughgoing EPA process where all the information related to environmental impacts of a project are analysed in the public domain, public submissions can be made, and the EPA comes out with its recommendations. Then there's an appeals process whereby other parties, third parties, can raise additional issues if they haven't been dealt with properly by the EPA. And then the minister can completely ignore that whole process and all of the government resources that goes into running that process and make a completely different decision based on really what is secret information that only the minister has, and the minister doesn't have to disclose that information. So that's not a process of good governance. It's certainly not a process of good environmental decision making. And we think it's really important to try and uphold those good governance processes for our environment, but also just for the strength of our democracy here in Western Australia. It was community groups and the Conservation Council's member groups and the Conservation Council itself that fought so hard for those laws, for the Environmental Protection Act to be put in place in the first place. It was never intended that the minister would be able to go against the advice of the EPA. It was never intended that the Environmental Protection Act would be able to be used to approve the extinction of species. So it's really important that we defend those environmental laws and reinstate good governance around that and good policy around that as well.
Does the issue of an environmental court feature as a possibility or something that would help?
Look, an environmental court would be a huge step forward because at the present time we can only raise procedural arguments in the Supreme Court, and in fact our Supreme Court challenge was dismissed because our environmental law simply wasn't strong enough. Now, if there was an environment court, we'd actually be able to raise the substantive impacts on our environment, and those substantive impacts and issues would be debated before a court. Now, other states and other jurisdictions have that in place, but in Western Australia that's not currently afforded to us.
And what about funding for the Environmental Defenders Office? Why is that a crucial part?
Well, funding for both the Conservation Council and the Environmental Defenders Office is really critical, particularly the Environmental Defenders Office, because it's very expensive for community organisations to actually go to our courts, even though that is a process that's available to us under our democratic system. It's very expensive for us to do that, and it's very expensive to access the legal advice to do that. Now, we've just gone through a situation with the Supreme Court where our case has been dismissed, and we are likely to have very significant court costs awarded against us. So it's really important that we have an Environmental Defenders Office, an independent organisation that can actually represent the interests of community groups who are there to defend the environment. We've got industry proponents like uranium miners and others that have got very deep pockets and have got big budgets for defending these legal challenges. So we need a public interest advocate in terms of environmental law. That's what the Environmental Defenders Office provides, and it's really important that the state provides some funding contribution to that.
What about an environmental public policy or legal framework around climate change? Would that be of value?
Absolutely. At the present time, we have no legal mechanism, really, to translate the science of climate change into a regulatory regime to require pollution to be reduced. The Environmental Protection Act does provide some mechanism to do that, but it's really very clumsy because we're talking about a global problem, and the way that the Environmental Protection Act is written, it's really best applied to local environmental impacts that are felt here in Western Australia. Now, the pollution that we produce does create impacts that are felt here in Western Australia, but it also contributes to a global problem. So we do need to rethink the legal regime around that. And really that's best done, I think, at the Commonwealth level. But in the absence of the Commonwealth government putting in place any science-based policy framework, and I think it's very hard to see when and how that would occur, given the state of Australian politics nationally, then it's really up to the states to step into this space. Now, other states have climate change legislation, and mostly what that does is it takes the kinds of emissions reductions that would be required to meet the Paris temperature goals and translates them into legislation. It requires a regular reporting mechanism so that we know what our pollution is doing and whether it's tracking to those trajectories and towards those targets or not. And it requires the state governments to come up with comprehensive strategies about how they're going to reduce that pollution and address that over time. That's not something that we have here in Western Australia. In fact, Western Australia is the only state without either a renewable energy target or a carbon pollution reduction target. And so we don't even have the policy basis for doing this, let alone the legal basis for doing this. So we're really a big step behind in that regard. And that's something that we need community and people to really be involved with pushing government on that front, because government are not going to do this themselves. They've got significant vested interests with companies like Chevron that have been calling the shots for a long time here in Western Australia. And they've been doing that in a way to preserve their corporate interests, but at the expense of our environment and our local communities. So we really need to be standing up to that.
If environmentalists are going to meet and respond to environment challenges, it seems they will also need to re-establish a rule of law. a system based not just on contesting points of procedure to buy time, but which will allow appeals courts to expertly consider the objective environmental merits of each case. And for those who are willing to cast the environment aside in favour of what they say will be economic benefits for the community, in the future the onus may be on them to actually prove their financial case, rather than presuming them or be trading on this claim as a way to oppose the environment ideologically. Stay tuned to future Understory programmes as we further investigate the link between environment, democracy and the rule of law, as well as in-depth stories on how we're managing climate change. You can listen again and share this program, as well as the Climate 2018 series, by Googling Understory Blog. I'm Elizabeth Pove, and thanks to Adrian Glamorgan. We look forward to being with you, same time, same planet next week, when there'll be more to explore with Understory.